Welcome to the George Lynch Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Legendary Gear, the game call company's Legend by Design. Hey, I'm here this week with Todd Copley, a good friend of mine for years. Todd is a world champion, plus a champion of champions in duck call. He is also a very well-known duck hunter. I've had the privilege to have Todd come down here today to our little humble abode and right here off the refuge, and we're going to do a little podcast here today. We did a little bit of videoing. And Todd, I appreciate you making it down here.
Anytime. I love it.
We're kind of in the sticks a little bit, aren't we?
That's all right. We could probably shoot a few geese from here, too.
Well, that's what we're waiting. I got the Rattay right behind the door there. But no, I'm glad that you're here. And dude, with some of the stories we've been telling today, you know, you and I, we're kind of like the old guys. And it's interesting. I love to hear your stories and some, because it deals with some of the people I know. And mm-hmm. we had great conversations listening to you talk about Butch Richenbach, who used to be the owner of Rich and Tone, and the stories. And I know Butch, and the years are going through, and it's kind of good to you know, reflect.
Sure,
absolutely. Back on people who meant a lot in your life and stuff. But for our viewers out there, if you just kind of give a little bit of history, and especially the younger guys that. Now, who you are and how you got started, you know, you're known in the main street duck calling, but you know, you're like, you were talking, your body's beat up because you're a hardcore duck hunter.
Yeah,
and you were a duck hunter first.
Sure, absolutely. You know, I started, this is my 42nd duck season. I started duck hunting when I was 14 years old. Me and a couple buddies of mine, when we were freshmen in high school, gypped school one day and decided we were going to teal hunt. And I've been bitten by this disease ever since. You know, the competition calling thing is kind of weird how it started off. At the time I was 16, and there was a guy that had a sporting goods store. I'm from Des Moines, Iowa, and a sporting goods store, and he sold Rich and Tone duck calls. And I had to work and save money for like 5 paychecks before I could buy. I still have the same duck call, that first
Seriously?
Duck call. Yeah. $40 for a maple laminated Rich and Tone duck call. And he asked me, you know, the buddy of mine that told me about it, we need to buy Rich and Tone. We need to get one of these calls and he'll help us. And the guy that I bought the call from at the sporting goods store helped me get to be better and better. And at the time, the more I got to know him, he was a committee member for the Arrowhead Ducks Unlimited chapter in Des Moines, Iowa. Asked why I wanted to be a committee member. God, yeah, that's absolutely, I have to do that. And then I can be around other duck hunters and learn how to be a better caller. And at that time they had the Iowa Sports and Vacation Show. It was every March at Vets Auditorium in Des Moines. And about 2 weeks before, we had a committee meeting and said, well, we need somebody to represent our chapter in the Iowa State Duck Calling Contest, because they had it every March. And I'm thinking, God, all these guys are good duck callers. You know, they're teaching me how to do this. This is cool. And the guy that was teaching me that I bought the call from, we'll have Todd do it. That was the most, no way I'm not going to do it. And I was basically forced to start competing. There were 18 guys in the contest. I finished 35th. And from that point forward, I just kind of was ate up in the head with competition calling.
Well, you're very competitive nature anyway.
Yeah.
Yep. So how long did it take before you started getting into the big contest and then placing the, hey, this is, I think I got the talent for this?
In 1994,
there's some honkers right there.
Yeah, we should grab the gun. In 1994, I was up in Minnesota, and that year I won the hunters division, which was kind of, you know, callers that had never qualified for a contest, had never finished in the top 5, you know, that was the beginners. And they're kind of getting back to that now, and I'm glad, because it takes
right, gets everybody involved.
Exactly. And I won that, and that was where I really got bit. And I did not qualify for the world that year, but I felt, you know, I felt I was close. I just needed a little more work. In March of 1995, I sent a letter to Pat Stevens, Miss Pat, down in Stuttgart. Had no idea how to get a hold of Butch. And I knew I wanted to get a Rich and Tone. And I sent a letter to her. She called me, gave me Butch's phone number, called Butch, left a message. Never heard anything from him. It was April of that same year. I get a phone call at 4 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday.
And 4 in the morning?
4 in the morning. And usually if somebody calls me at 4 in the morning, somebody's died. You know, yeah. This first thing I'm going to say is,
not good.
Who's dead? And it was Butch. And we talked on the phone for 3 hours. I hear you want a duck caller. Yes, I want a duck call. And he said,
at 4 in the morning.
At 4 o'clock in the morning. My wife come out of it, and she's like, "What's? Who's dead? This is Butch Reichenbach. Who's that?" And she, that was it. So I talked to Butch for a long time, and, you know, I told him, I'm just kind of really getting into this, really serious. And he said, "Well, it's an acrylic duck call. Have you ever blown an acrylic duck call?" And, "Well, no, not really." I was nervous because this was Butch Reichenbach. I mean, he's the man. And he said, "Okay." He said, "What color do you want?" And my favorite color is blue. I have, give or take, about 190 blue acrylic duck calls in my collection. It's a disease. I said, "Well, blue is my favorite color." I said, "Can you make me a blue one?" "Yeah, but we don't have blue. I only got clear." And I'm like,
Why did you ask?
So, I
hooked you in.
At the time, you know, we were a young family. I only had 2 kids and dirt poor, it seemed like, at the time. And I had to coax my wife into letting me have $125 to send to Butch. And I sent him $125 and I got an acrylic, clear acrylic. I wanted blue, but I got a clear acrylic duck call sent to me. And I still have that call as well. The first contest I competed in was the Iowa State Fair. I got second in that.
Who won that? Do you remember?
My brother-in-law, Pat Morello, at the time.
Yeah.
And it was just a contest for the fair. That was on a Thursday. Saturday, we were going to drive to Omaha to compete in the Cornhusker Regional in 1995. And I was nervous wrecked.
The Cornhusker Regional.
And went to that. There was a couple of guys there that I knew were competition callers. Mike and Tim Haper.
Yep.
Great callers. Wayne Betts was there. Call maker. Great caller. Has been in the top 10 of the world. Mike and Tim both have qualified the world. And I'm thinking,
oh, you had some big guys.
I'm going for at least 5th. And I was very lucky, very fortunate. That was the first contest I ever won. And I qualified for the world. And as we're going home, I won $400. I'm like, oh, my God. I paid $125 for a duck call. I paid that off. Great. We're going to come up money ahead. Alternator went out in the car. Cost me $440. So I come out. I was walking on air, driving home, and had to replace alternator, so that money was gone. But
you know what? It still can't replace you. You want it?
No, I guess maybe I'm weird. Maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm normal. I have all the plaques that I've ever
won. No, I think it's awesome.
It's just, I know it takes a lot of work. It did for me. And it was a lot of commitment. I practice in my kitchen from when I got that duck call from Butch in June of 1995. 2 hours a day, every day in my kitchen. I was retired in 2010. I blew that duck call for another year. So for 16 years, I blew 2 hours.
How'd that go with the woman? Because I always hear that there's something about the sound of that duck call offends a woman's ear.
She worked nights. I worked days. It was perfect when she was at work. It worked out. My kids despised me. But, you know, it's weird because my kids enjoyed going to contests. And if I wasn't competing because I was either already qualified or whatever the case was, it was a little mini vacation for us. My kids pretty good about, they know a good routine. Well, they know a routine. Not that mine were good by any means, but
they knew what a routine was,
and they knew what a mistake was, and they knew that transition was good. That feed call was a little muddy. They knew what they were listening for. And all three of them. My son actually competed. He got 4th in the junior world 1 year. Good caller. And I think both daughters, it's in the gene pool now. So
it's
I
in
think
the blood,
they,
huh?
I think so. I think
you know,
they
it's
could
funny
do
that you mentioned that because Diane, when I'm in there tuning calls, and sometimes I'll get a call, and usually we hit it pretty much on the first time, but we won't quit till it's done. But she'll sit there and listen. I'll hear her say some, that didn't sound right.
You know,
they obtained that. Oh, that year.
I consider myself a fairly good judge. I'm pretty strict in what I want to hear, I guess. I don't want to hear my routine by any means, but I judge every routine as I hear it. Sure. And I consider myself a pretty good judge.
You're my a straight shooter.
My wife is probably a better judge.
Yeah.
She knows what to listen for. She's got a great ear for never ever competing. Never duck hunt. She's duck hunted with me a couple times, but not taking it the psychoticness that I have. But she's got a great ear. She's got an excellent ear. She's heard a few things that even I don't hear, and I hear quite a bit. I pretty much hear everything I'm hearing. So
I like what you said earlier today. It was a comment that I love, that, you know, he's a straight shooter. He's a one shot guy. He shoots one bullet in the head. He don't waste six shots.
Yeah,
I'm what he says, he pretty much means.
Yeah, that's the way I was raised, and you know, it's hard to give up what you know.
So now we're gonna move up and you know, to your first world. When was that?
2003, the year before. I was close. I felt I was close. I blew a bad note in the second round. Got disqualified.
You knew right then.
I knew something was there. And I told, I was blowing a Rich and, or a Echo at the time, and I told Rick. I said, you know, hey, I apologize. I said I'll win it next year. And you know, he's got a lot of guys. He's got a lot of great callers. Mm-hmm. And okay. But I didn't hear.
We're talking about Rick Dunn. With Echo calls.
And I didn't hear, okay. I'm going to do it. I just made my mind up. Practiced, got qualified right away. We were down at the shop a couple days before. Blew my routine. Sounded terrible. Just sounded terrible. And I thought, the heck with it. I'm just going to blow the duck call. You know, I made the last round a couple times, and getting into the last round, my highest finish was fourth in the world at the time. And, you know, it's down to the last four people, and okay, great. I got fourth again. I was happy with that. I'm getting a plaque. I'm getting a patch. That's awesome. That to me was,
And there's a lot of callers.
That year, I want to say there were 68. So yeah, there's 68 of the very best there.
And those guys, and to make it into the world, make this clear, you got to be sanctioned, don't you? You have to win some type of state sanctioned call to be able to blow, you know, to run into the world call. So you had guys who won sanctioned. These weren't guys that just showed up to the contest. Oh, I'm going to try this contest. These guys had to win a contest to get here.
It's unique compared to what the World Goose Calling Contest is, where you're not required. Yeah, anybody can jump in, and it's work to get there. Yep. Without a doubt. And you know, at the time, there's four of us sitting there, and John Stevens was a two-time world champion and has won every world championship that's other than the women's world championship. He's the man. He's the best. And they call everybody off, and it's me and John. And I've been at the birth of two kids at the time. Never in my life had I ever been so nervous. And I was just expecting, man, second place, that's awesome. I'm so happy.
First loser.
Yeah, I'm kissing my sister. I'm the first place loser. And they called his name. And, you know, this is going to, very few people know this. And it's taken me a long time to even, this is the first time you've heard this. And I told my brother-in-law this about 2 years later. I had a dream about a month before the world that year that it come down between me and John.
Seriously.
On the eyes of my grandkids. And is there such a thing as good karma or I don't know, you know, divine intervention, call it what you want. Right place at the right time. And I'm just very fortunate and very lucky.
Yep. And plus the hard work to get there.
It's a commitment. It is. Yep. It's like anything.
But when they called his name, and I bet this, the feeling.
Cried like a little kid that had his candy stolen. It was not my proudest moment. But it was, I mean.
It was and it wasn't.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was all the practice and the work getting up to that point. You know, it's weird because I'm not trying to name drop. There's a call maker in Iowa, and I was using his call for a while. And I switched from his call to that Rich and Tone in 1995. My brother-in-law was still using that guy's call, sent a letter to my brother-in-law stating that, you know, hey, you know, thanks for using my call and competing with it. There is another, had no idea about the relationship between me and my brother-in-law. My brother-in-law showed me this about 2 months before. You know, there's a guy that used to blow my call in your area, Todd Copley. He has talent, but he'll never achieve what he wants to because of, you know, not following my structured plan of blowing this call, blah, 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 kind of stuff. And that just, I'm telling you what,
That fueled the...
Oh, man. And I still have that letter.
Do you really?
I'm a pack rat when it comes to the nostalgia, this kind of stuff. And it's, you know, every time I went to a contest, I was born in 1965. I have a 1965 quarter in my pocket, a pocket knife, a Buckeye, and cherry chapstick.
Oh, so you're
in my right pocket. And in my back left pocket was that note.
To remind you.
Weird. I'm a weirdo.
So we go. How many times you win the world?
I won the world in 2003. I finished in the top 10 in the years of competing 9 times, in the top 5, 7 times.
Wow. And so then let's go consistent to the champion of champions. This is you won the champion of champions, right?
2010. I finished 3rd in the world that year. I was practicing on Saturdays. I was practicing 8 hours a day. Saturdays and Sundays, I'd go through 2 courts a day.
A day.
I wanted to win the world, and I always, you know, to win that 3 times is great. I don't want to say there was unfinished business, but I kind of thought I was hitting my stride because I was finishing pretty good down there. I remember the very first time I went down there in 1995, hearing Buck Gardner, Rick Dunn, John Stevens, Bernie Boyle, all those guys going up, people in the crowd cheering for them. And I went, Todd Copley, Des Moines, Iowa, in the Cornhusker Regional. Like crickets. Like, someday y'all going to remember who I am. And that's terrible. I don't want to say that. Yeah, but it was just, woo! Yeah, I had to cheer for myself. And it was kind of cool because, you know, that's my second home. That was a family. The best friends I ever made in my entire life are guys that I see once a year.
Yeah.
That I would give a kidney to. One time a year I see them. And, it worked out in 2010. I practiced really hard. I can't say I held back not wanting to win not wanting to win the world, so I couldn't compete in the champion of champions, but I blew 3 routines, and then there was a call-off. So I blew 4 routines in the world, and then 3 more routines in the champion of champions. And that's why I was practicing. I would blow 15 routines straight. Just blow routine, take a breath, start another one. Blow routine, take a breath, start another one. So I built my lungs up to being prepared. I want to win the champion of champions. Yeah. And you know, in my opinion, that's the best of the best.
Yep.
And it wasn't to beat anybody. It was to see how well I fared. That's how this contest
was. It was a personal thing.
Yeah. You know, I never competed for the winnings. You know, the 3 things in that trophy package you can't buy is the ring, the patch, and the trophy. That's the only 3 things I ever competed for my whole entire life. I go buy a boat, I buy a gun. That stuff is bought.
Blood, sweat, and tears.
Yeah. John Doe walking down the street can't go buy that trophy. It has to be worked and earned for.
Wow, that's a good point. You tell me the story, though, today about the senior world. You competed in the senior world and never practiced. And this is a hilarious story.
Mathematically, absolutely should not have happened. I judged the world last year. It was a champion of champions year. And they decided to have so this is like fate. It had to work out this way. If they would have, without COVID, if it would have been 2020, I would have not made the qualifying age. You have to be 55 to compete. Wouldn't have been able to. And COVID hit. They didn't have a world championship. So last year they had all of that. I still had no intent of competing. The 9.5-hour drive down, never once did it cross my mind. Didn't bring my duck call with me. And hadn't blown a routine in 12 years, probably.
And you were going down to judge the world.
I was going to judge the world and the champion of champions and anything else that they needed me for. Get down there, it's 20 minutes before the champion of champions. And you hang around the guys, the group, and why aren't you blowing in this? Don't even have my duck call. Didn't practice. And Michael Steinmeier, the Steiny, the world champion at the time, he's like, well, here, blow mine. That's bad juju. You don't want somebody else blowing your duck call before the contest. No. Just blow it. I don't know. We walked to the Chamber of Commerce underneath the canopy, and I just blew a couple quacks. It blew okay. It was a little light for me. I blow a pretty heavy call. And blew a couple hails, and sounds okay. And I kind of look, I said, sound okay? And he's kind of laughing, yeah. And at the time, I thought he was like, yeah, whatever. It sounds terrible. And so Ron, I blew.
Steiny.
Yeah. And that, I mean, I love him to death. He is my brother from another mother. I love that guy.
Yeah.
At that time, Kyle Jones and Forrest Carpenter walk up, and I blew about a half a routine. I'm like, is that sound okay? And Forrest was like, yeah, that sounds really good. And I'm like, okay. I tell that to guys who sound really bad sometimes. Yeah, that sounds fine. Sure. Just joking around. And he was like, so that's what you've been telling me all these years? No. Anyway, does it sound okay? Yes, you should go. And so I did. Went into the chamber, went to pay for it, and the lady taking the money time, she's not, it's cut, the time is cut. You ran out of time, you can't do it. And Steiny was like, well, he's judging the world and the champion of champions tomorrow night. You need to let him blow. So she called Bill Free. Bill Free come running over in a panic. What are you doing? So I just, pay afterwards. Yeah, you can go ahead and compete. So I went in with a borrowed duck call that I'd never blown but 5 minutes before. 12 years without ever blowing a routine.
Yeah, 12 years not blowing a routine.
Competitively. Yeah.
And then something else that was really cool. Man, all years worst. You said you never drew the
all
bullet.
All the years down there, I've never drawn the bullet, ever.
The bullet means drawn number one.
And where everybody's there, we reach in, and I figure there was like three things left and chips left. I reach in there, pull it out, confident as all get out, bullet. So I threw it down. I just told everybody, listen, I'm the dummy caller. I'm making your routines better, trust me, because they're gonna judge me, and you guys are gonna be absolutely amazing.
All scoring high.
Oh my God, you're gonna kill them. Blew my routine. To the best of my recollection, a year later, I don't think I made any mistakes. Walked off stage, I was fine. Made the second round, draw the chip, thinking I drew the bullet. I'm never gonna get it again. Number two. What's worse than one is number two. Blew my routine. Felt okay. No mistakes. Nothing. A buddy of mine that was in the crowd, for whatever reason, every time I ever walk down the stairs of that stage, I look down. I don't make eye contact. Like an idiot, I decided to just look over at him, and I got one of those. And I'm thinking...
Oh, no.
He knows I'm screwed up. I'm screwed up. I'm completely out. He's a caller. He knows I'm out. Made the third round.
Now, the third round, though, you drew...
Reached in. I figured I'll reach in early. Drew the bullet.
Now, all these years you've never drawn. Now you've drawn twice.
Never. I do it in one contest. Go up, blow my routine, look over at Hoot again. Got another one of those. And, you know, we go up there. And there were they. I made the top five. They had five of us that made the callback. No ties. And they're starting to call off names. Johnny Mafu's is a great caller, and I figured it's between him and Steve Elmore because they're practicing. They're doing this stuff. I'm on a rented duck call with no routine.
No routine.
And they call Boo, and I'm thinking, oh man, because he's been practicing. John's a great caller. He's a great man and a great caller. It's down between me and Elmore. And I got a rib in the side. And he's like, man, I hate you. You won. You sounded good. And he did. He sounded great. They both sounded, everybody there sounded good. I was in over my head. And they called Elmore off for first runner up. And I was as much shocked winning the senior world last year as I was winning the world championship in 2003. Wow. Just probably so shook even harder. Didn't cry, but I shook a lot.
Yeah, that's awesome. Just to win the world, to win the champion of champions, and then to win the senior world.
Yeah.
That's quite the prestigious title. Well, let's jump from there now to the duck hunting, Todd Copley.
that's a whole different kind of animal. Yeah. Where, you know, I've always considered myself a really hard duck hunter. I don't want to, I'm not a duck hunting diva or a snob, but I like mallards. They call great. And I've always been a mallard hunter. And, you know, we were talking earlier, my aches and pains and groans. I'm just coming off a little over 3 weeks of duck hunting, and I lost 11 pounds doing it. It was a grind. You know, you get 4 hours sleep a night. You go 18 hours in between eating mm-hmm. and meals, if you even eat at all. It's just, it was a job this year, but it was the best 3 weeks of my life.
Yep.
Because it takes a certain kind of a person to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning every day for 3 weeks. And in some cases, you're wearing this. And in some cases, you're wearing lots of insulation. And, you know, we had days where we were swatting bugs. And we had days where we were breaking ice. That's a whole different kind of animal to go out in the freezing cold, to go out and break ice, to make open water so you can shoot a duck. And
so majority of your duck hunting, do you do on water, would you say?
Yeah. You know, we had one hunt this year, last weekend. We hunted in a field, and that was the first time I've hunted ducks on dry ground for quite a while, yeah. Quite a few years, actually. And it was just, you know, it was 5 degrees outside and everything was froze. And it was too hard to get a boat trailer in, and it was too hard. I mean, I have a chainsaw. I guarantee I've had a chainsaw for 15 years. It ain't cut but one tree. The rest of it is cut ice out, either on a pond or a boat ramp to get the boat in. So, and it was, I could have cut a hole to get the boat in, but there's no way I could have probably went anywhere because ice was getting pretty thick at the time. And the flow of the river at the time is really low. So we really don't have thin ice to break with my boat. And I got a pretty big boat, but it just wasn't going to do the trick. But it was a job. I'm a duck hunter first. I'm a calling judge second, and every now and then I'll compete. But
when would you say that has the two kind of overmingled, helped you? I mean, definitely learning to control a call. People, whether they say, you know, that's not duck hunting, I still, same way with goose to me. The routine and the contest is a different animal, but absolutely you can control that call. It's about control. So you being able to take that talent, I mean, you're not going to do everything in that contest, but all that practice has kind of made you, you know, you are the king of that call. You have really controlled that. So you know how to hit those ducks and hit that pitch and that duck sound. Yeah, you're not, but them hen quacks and everything are just as good as what you're doing.
I couldn't agree more. Competition duck calling definitely makes you a better master of a duck call. It's a musical instrument, just like a goose call is. I agree 100%. You don't have to, but... I think some people have a hidden musical talent, right, if they're proficient on a duck call or a goose call. Because it's not something you just blow air into. It sounds the furthest thing from a duck. A duck would never win a duck calling contest in competition-wise. Main Street, I think the goose callers probably have a better advantage because geese make those noises. Mm-hmm. Where ducks don't, back, 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 back. They don't do that.
Yep.
The low end of a routine, yeah, that's where you want to be a duck. But
that's come to with a lot of control and experience.
100%.
Now I know that talking with you, we were at Presley's this year together working their show, and I had my booth there, and you ran over and grabbed one of our axe cut down calls, and you were telling me that, which I was shocked at, was the last 5 years you have kind of switched from running a J frame, yep, to using a cut down, and you want to explain about that.
You know, in Iowa especially, the J-frame, hundreds and hundreds and thousands of thousands of ducks have met their demise to the sound of a J-frame. I know, like I say, 42 years of duck hunting, I don't know anybody that blows a cut-down call. I've had one for 5 years. I've been trying to learn how to blow one from the first time I got it. And it's just one of those, it's a different animal. It really is. And I've heard the guys in Arkansas that blow those things. Man, it's to hear one right up, they sound terrible. They really do. But you walk 100 yards away, man, it's an 800-pound duck.
Yeah.
And that, it's, I know, it is. It is. And, you know, you hear things, you know, you don't want to blow too hard at the ducks. Ducks are loud. Mm-hmm. Why not? But I think there's a kind of misconception on cut downs that you have to blow really hard to make them really loud. Yeah. They're not built that way at all.
It's a total different approach of the air.
Oh, the air is completely. It's like a difference between a short reed and a flute call, really. It's
you know what? To look at, that's a great comparison.
It is. That's the only way I can look at it.
Both sound goosier, you know, ducky. Mm-hmm. It's just a different air presentation.
Yeah, you can't blow a flute call like you blow a short reed.
Right.
You just can't do it, and vice versa. And the same with these things. You know, I think my reluctance a long time ago to do it is when I was competitive and competing. I mean, you know, Butch always said that that's the problem, guys going from cut downs to competition calls when it's time to compete. They have a hard time
making this transition.
Transitioning over. Because it is a different style. I switched. And I don't even have a J-frame cut down or a J-frame call on my lanyard. I've completely eliminated them. I've called lots of ducks in with those things. There is a difference. And these cut downs, it's a different animal, but it's amazing the effect it has on ducks. Shooting ducks, hunting ducks, calling them, you got to be able to read them first. Mm-hmm. And reading is 90% of it. But when you figure out how to read the birds, you can still blow a note at them and not get the reaction that you were thinking. And that's kind of how I look at it too. You know, my first lick is hard. I throw hammers at them as fast as I can. Yeah,
it's like me.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer in if you don't scare the tail feathers off of them, they're going to work.
Yep.
And I do the same. I'm not a goose caller by any means. I call geese, but I'm not a goose caller like you are. I do what I think is going to work, and if that doesn't, I try something else. But the duck calling is...
And that's what I think I found with the cut down. With me, and this is really my first year going strictly kind of with the cut down. That, again, like you said, I hit them hard, but it's about the timing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's aggressive. If you do the right timing at the right place, but that cut down, I explained with the other guys, first time we hunted last year up in Minnesota, we were filming, and the guys had the J-frame, some of my double reeds, single reeds, and they were working the ducks first thing and let them go, and well, I pulled that cut down out. So they're, all of a sudden, and the control of them ducks responded, and they just stopped. And I said, boys, the man just walked in the room. And that's what it's like. It's like the rest is like teenagers talking. Yeah. And all of a sudden, the man just walked in. But this year, she's filmed us, and we've had some pretty good duck hunts. But I found that when the sun started coming up and maybe the blind stuck, the ducks were a little bit more reluctant. They'd be mm-hmm. wanting to then do that little slide out. Just for that slide out, hit them with a little of that quick. And I'm telling you, that call, that cut down when it's done right and the timing, it is a controlling call.
It makes them do things they don't want to do.
Exactly.
And, you know, I've shot a lot of ducks in my life. And if, you know, I don't need to make a pile. I get yelled at by the guys that I hunt with, my group, that I bird watch too much. and it's kind of, it's not that I don't, I just like that. It's kind of hypnotizing.
Them. You betcha. Sound of those wings.
Oh man. And when you have hens bark back and
it's cool.
It's cool. It really is. And I'm more of a bird watcher anymore. I don't need to shoot a whole lot of birds to make me happy.
Yeah.
But to make them do something that they don't want to do, and these cut downs, that's what they do.
They're responsive. Absolutely.
They respond to these things.
Well, I know that's, when you came up to me, you pulled one of our Delrin Axe out there, and it's been one of your favorite go-to this year, you told me. And I'll tell you what, why don't you, if you don't mind.
No.
Kind of do a little routine, just kind of a scenario when you first see ducks and how you'd work them and run that call for us a little bit. Could you do that?
Absolutely. You know, these things are psychotically loud. And
that's what my wife says about me.
You know, I spend a lot of time photographing ducks. I'm around waterfowl a lot. And it's a competition to them, just like it is for me or you. If we're out hunting, you know, if there's a guy or a group of guys or other boats, if we put in an area and there's 15 boats there, that's 14 other groups we got to try and get birds from.
Oh, absolutely.
And so I, whatever you can have an upper edge to do that with, that's what these things do. You, again, for all the years that I've been hunting, I know that guy's using a J-frame. I know that guy's using a J-frame. They have no idea what this is because there just isn't anybody using them. But, you know, like I say, I hit them hard. I don't believe in baby talking them right away.
Right.
If they look like they're...
You want a response.
Exactly. I'd rather scare them away than bore them to death.
Exactly.
And most times you're not going to scare them away. So when I hit them right away, it's... I lean on this thing as much as I possibly can. That was a bad note at first. But that's an acorn. They get stuck in their gullet sometimes.
That's the acorn.
Or corn in our situation. We don't have acorns where they eat at in Iowa. But I'll hit them really hard at first. And, you know, most of the time, and I'm not, by no means, it's not bragging. They want to hear more.
Yeah.
When you get a flock of birds and they turn inside out because something just is appealing, you know you got them. And, you know, when they work in a little bit more, again, a lot of that applies to reading the ducks. I've noticed in the last few years, and I think it's just other hunters are conditioning ducks, just like the spinners have conditioned those things. You know, that was a very effective tool when they came out in the, you know, late 1990s, early 2000s. If you're not in a picked field with a spinner, you have them on the water. I don't even own one. I refuse to have one. I think they're detrimental. They hurt you.
I see you woke up one of the horses that was under the stall here. Stormy's made his way out.
Sorry about that.
That was funny.
But, you know, these cut downs work. So I've noticed in the last few years that I think I've noticed a tendency for ducks to want to be called harder, more aggressively to the water.
To the water,
to the
sounding like a duck.
Yeah, 9 times out of 10, you know, the 99 times out of 100, most guys will back off when they're starting to come in. And every time I've done that, again, 9 times out of 10 this year, whenever I start backing off, they lose interest. The ducks do, and I don't know if it's the ducks in general or if it's the sound. I think they come to the sound, obviously, and they want to hear that. I may not hammer them, but it's you hear ducks on a marsh, you'll hear there's a hen that doesn't want that hen to get what she wants, but there's another one somewhere else, so
they're barking overlapping
all over the place.
Yeah.
And I think if you have, I hunt generally with 12 dozen decoys. Later in the year I put that many out, but usually I hunt on the water 7 to 9 dozen. Most guys, if they put out 7 to 9 dozen decoys, sound like only one duck in there.
Mm-hmm.
I can't sound like, I wish I could, but I can sound like 5 or 6. And if you do it enough and change, mix
and
things
hit
up.
That right timing.
And timing is everything. Reading what the birds are doing, you're gonna be effective.
Yep.
100%.
Yeah, definitely I've seen a change in controlling ducks. I actually, you know, I have a new goose call out called the Ripper, and it's short, and but it's designed, and it's so aggressive. It'll do so much in the field that, to me, I said this is a game changer for me for goose hunting, and that's the same way I feel about the cut down for my use. And, you know, I've been applied a lot like you. It's a total different animal. And I'll tell guys this. It's a different beast, but let me tell you, once you learn to tame that beast, it's wild when you turn it loose.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. And I have never been able to control ducks and turn ducks, you know, without a spinner, like you said, without the spinners. Mm-hmm. We found that this year, too. And I usually find it more on these days like today. You definitely don't use a spinner because
cloudy days are bad.
Cloudy days are bad. But that cut down, that's what I'm saying. That cut down on that cloudy day makes a whole world of difference. It was a game changer to me this year. And
you know, the old story, and I think it was Mark Twain that said this, that, you know, the best way for conservation of waterfowl is to put a call in your pocket. And in some cases, that's probably true. But, and there are a few days where I think, man, maybe I'm blowing too much. You know, these cut downs work on stale birds.
Yeah.
Which J-frames rarely did. And you gotta,
I agree with that.
We're in Iowa. We're in flyover country. Yeah. We don't have the waterfowl populations right. that we did 5 years ago, let alone 10, 20, 42 years ago. We just don't have the birds here. We don't have the luxury of what Missouri and Arkansas and Kansas Louisiana. We just don't have that. So we have to take advantage of what we have when we have it. Mm-hmm. The birds that do stick around here, unfortunately, due to the lack of knowledge by some hunters, get shot at very high distances, get called
out. They get educated.
They get educated really quick. They get educated really fast. So sometimes you need something just a little bit different.
Why don't you hit that feed and show us, when would you hit the feed and hit the quack on?
You know, generally, if I'm a bad shot, so I know guys that are proficient all day long at 30 yards, which that's a good shooting range. I'm way better at 20 than I am at 30. So if I've
and
got
you're honest,
I am, I'll admit it. There's sometimes I'm better off throwing shells at them than I am even shooting them through the gun. I want to keep them on a string. So if I've got them worked in and I don't have to bark at them really hard, I'll just, I say, cook, 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 shook, 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 took a, took a, shook a, shook a, took a, took a. I'd throw a lot of words in at a lot to sound like the nine dozen decoys. So it's, I'd stutter my cadence
that right there, man.
That's just... it. A bark. Just. I'm saying check, 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 check. End of the call.
Yeah.
Just that is a cluck. Just like goose hunting. You want them at 10, at 20 yards. You want them at 15. Keep doing that.
Keep doing
they want to they know want... where that sound is. Ducks and geese are
lead them to the hole.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think too many people. That's exactly. And I think even geese. They'll start getting, especially if you start hunting, when you get a little bit of migrators in, but they, too many hunters, when the geese all of a sudden hit 50 yards, everybody shuts up. And all of a sudden those geese, you know, because everybody's shutting up because they're getting ready to grab their gun. Everybody mm-hmm. wants to be ready to shoot. But from all the years of guiding myself, you know, I'm finishing those birds. I'm on that call, finish them all the way to the bootstraps.
Absolutely.
And I think the ducks, I think birds like that, all of a sudden, you know, they heard this sound. I wanted to hear it, and that's why I'm coming in. All of a sudden, it goes dead silent. I think birds, once they've been, a couple have been shot, and a few flocks have been shot at in this pause moment, I think that they get conditioned, and it creates a wariness.
100%.
And they can pull out again. And absolutely, that, to me, I found with that feed and that soft cluck and that... And just finishing them down. Because, dude, it doesn't take long. To once they're there to come up and shoot a duck at 20 yards.
Absolutely.
You got plenty of time.
And it's going to go from 20 to maybe 25 on a windy day. It's still an effective range to shoot a bird. I look at it as like, you know, if I'm a young man and I want to go to a party and meet somebody, and I walk into a party and I can hear walking down the street, hallway, wherever, if I'm going into a bar, and I hear all kinds of noise, and you walk in and it's dead silent,
Something's wrong.
That's a red flag.
Yeah.
And why are ducks and geese any different?
Yep.
They hear all this noise up until that point, and you've got them convinced they like what they hear, and they're coming in, and then you stop. Yep. I don't know. That's, to me, you're telling them there's something wrong here.
Yep. I think that's a lot of great advice you hear, guys, especially the younger guys getting started. Listen, you hear guys like Todd and myself always talking about reading the birds first. I saw... a couple guys on Instagram or YouTube is something that they had on there, and with a competitor, you know, they were talking, but they had a ton of silhouettes all around them, and they were sitting there and they were talking, going to give a demonstration how to run goose calls. And so I'm watching this, and this is live out in the field. And, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden one guy gets all excited, say, "Hey, there's geese," and the camera guy, they're way out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the geese are already working to their hole, you know, doing this. And they, what do? They, la, 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 la. And then the geese just boogered and left. Mm-hmm. And they get back up. Well, you know, and then they start talking, and I start laughing. And to me, that's a prime example of what I'm talking about. It isn't, you know, it's not about being a world-class caller. You want to practice, but it's reading that bird. I'm not out there to practice calling. I'm out there. It's like you take batting practice during the off time.
Right.
In the game, it's game time.
Absolutely.
And I swing a bat. I don't swing a bat a whole lot. It just makes contact when I do.
Absolutely.
And that's the same way I use that analogy when calling and reading birds, is you want to be able to make that hit, make a swing when it counts. And those birds, you know, once they, you're doing all that and they get mesmerized, or not mesmerized, but that concentration, they hear that when they booger out, I think that's when guys blow them out.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like you 100%. Said, the cut down, you made a great point. It's loud, but it's that timing. When that bird gets to the point and he's going to make a decision and it's all of a sudden, wah, 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 and it sounds duck, I just made a decision for him. That's what I was trying to tell you. I can, like you said, I can get birds now with that call to do stupid things.
I'm a better duck caller than I'm a duck caller. Competition, I consider myself a pretty good duck hunter, duck caller, calling wild birds. I've shot my share of ducks with a J-frame. Don't get me wrong. They're great calls.
Yeah.
But where there's days where I had a J-frame and I, man, what is it? Is it too loud? Is it too quiet? What am I not doing? It sounds like everybody else on the marsh.
Yeah.
And this does not. And yeah, and I'm, you know, those guys that are sitting there calling when birds are coming in, they're already locked up, committed to coming in. I'm the world's biggest hypocrite. I preach. Don't fix it if it ain't broke.
All right.
I am the first to pick up a call. If there's birds at 60 yards bowed up coming in, first thing I do, grab my duck call. I'm guilty of it 100%. I'm man enough to admit I do not practice what I preach. It's just a terrible, I got to blow that call. It's a drug. Oh, yeah. If that's what drugs are, man, I'm addicted.
You're high till
the day I die. Without a doubt, till the day I die.
Well, I tell you what, folks, I hope you truly enjoyed this podcast. I enjoyed it. I appreciate you so much.
You and I have been friends for a long time. How we live in the same state and not shared a blind together, I'll never know.
Gonna change.
But that's got to change.
That's
100%.
Right.
Well, folks, I hope you liked this week's podcast. If you like it, please subscribe to our channel. Remember, at Legendary Gear, it's all about you guys. We are trying to bring you the best calls. We try to bring you the best content. So always remember, hunt safe, hunt smart, and may the good Lord be your guide.
Well, I'll be out there, rain or shining, all a part of the great design. Bring it on, I can never get enough. Because that's what legends are made of.